Welcome back, Sherlockians. Today on this Sherlock After Show, we talk about serial killers and crazy siblings. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to AfterBuzz TV. We are here doing the Sherlock After Show, Season 4, Episode 2. The Lying Detective, very ominous.
Ooh, yes. Like this music.
Yes, very apropos. I'm your host, Marissa Serafini. You can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV. Joining me, I have a lovely panel once again.
I'm Drexel Hurd. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Drexel Hurd.
I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can tweet at me at The Menguin. That's THEMENGUIN.
Hey, everybody. I'm Timothy Michael. You can follow me on all social media platforms at IamTimothyMike.
Yes, all right, excellent. Episode 2, here we are again, The Lying Detective. Real quick, thoughts. What were your thoughts of this episode? Drexel, we'll start with you.
I loved it. I mean, this is a this was, you know, we talked about Moriarty in the first episode and whether we not we thought he was going to come back. because the first episode didn't really have a foe. Like, it didn't really, like, we had
an antagonist.
Yeah. Had an ominous foe, like, you know.
But
somebody,
it was more like the past coming back to haunt you.
And now we actually get a situation where Sherlock has another person to have to deal with. Because we didn't get that in Abominable Bride either. So this is the first time we've had somebody that Sherlock has to deal with one-on-one.
Yeah. There's nothing more terrifying than a serial killer with money. Like, that... it's funny that they brought up H.H. Holmes in this episode because, yeah, that is literally the scariest thing, is a serial killer who has a means of killing and a means of getting rid of the bodies. And I think they really executed that whole premise really well.
Yeah, I agree that this episode, and, you know, Sherlock said it better himself, you know, what's scarier than a serial killer with unlimited resources? And that's exactly what Culverton had, and we'll touch up on that. But Culverton Smith as a villain in this episode, I thought was so on point.
Good.
And so fantastic. And like I said, I'm sure we'll talk about it, but this episode was on fire.
Yes, I really liked this episode. I think right out the gate, I thought the cinematography for this particular episode was phenomenal. I mean, every episode is like already high production value, but I think the certain camera angles and that purposely made you like on edge or like literally off-site. And because, you know, we get the moments where Sherlock is like drugged out, and we get all these different types of crazy angles that purposefully, you know, get you off not feeling right.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I don't know how I felt about the editing, because I know that they were trying to portray, you know, his drug-induced state of mind, but like cutting back and forth to Culverton, like out of context, seemed like a really weird way of going about it. Again, I kind of know what they were going for, but I don't know how I felt about the execution.
You guys talked about the cinematography. Between this episode and the third episode, I think they did a little behind the scenes thing on
a little featurette,
which I thought was really cool. Kind of showed us how they filmed a lot of the really cool scenes. We'll talk about the car scene. We'll talk about the another Mind Palace situation that he was in that he actually brought somebody into. Really, I think this is the first time, or at least I can't, from what I can remember, the first time there was somebody a part of this Mind Palace, which makes sense considering the character that he brought into the Mind Palace with him.
Yes, we'll definitely get into it. Let's start kind of near the beginning, and we'll do our best to cover everything, of course, but let's start with the Faith meeting. We see Sherlock in his flat talking to Faith. After the whole
quote-unquote faith.
Yeah. Quote-unquote. Is there one? Okay, we'll just kind of skipping to the end a little bit,
It's kind of hard not to talk about the end when you talk about this intro scene.
Faith is pretty much the woman who kind of starts it all, because her father is actually Culverton Smith, who is now quote-unquote serial killer that Sherlock has publicly accused of. But this meeting with Faith, what did you think of this meeting? Because Sherlock kind of seemed out of character. Did you expect, as we see at the reveal at the end, did you expect Faith to be real or fake?
I thought that Faith was real. I didn't think that Faith was impersonating anybody. I really thought that was his daughter, especially going back from the flashback.
Yeah, here's a question. And granted, I only watched it once, so I wish I had time to go back and rewatch it. But is the actress who's playing Faith, in the scene with all the rest of the board members is that the same actress who we see pretending to be Faith at the very end.
No, which is exactly why I was like, in the flash. Exactly, in the flashbacks, I was like, I didn't catch on to it when I was watching the episode, and maybe I should have. I don't know why I didn't, looking back on it, but the stylist of Faith was very good at deceiving the audience. And I don't think that we were, I think we were also deceived because we weren't concerned about Faith. We were really concerned about Sherlock, because Sherlock is in this, you know, drug-induced downward spiral, and, you know, we're just coming off of the Mary getting shot and Mary dying. Like, I don't think that we as an audience are looking for, you know, Faith. Does that Faith look exactly like the Faith in the flashbacks? Like, and plus, this was 3 years ago, so she might have aged.
And Sherlock even said with the picture on the phone, it's like, you really let yourself go. So, the physical differences were subtle enough for us to believe, oh, yeah, this could still be the same person. Mm-hmm. She just physically changed
a little bit. Also think from as a viewer, we weren't focused on Faith, not... For me, I was not focused on Faith because of what had happened in the previous episode. I wasn't focused on Faith because the way that it was edited, we were focused on what she was writing. We were focused on what Culverton was saying to the people around the table. Mm-hmm. It was very blurry. There was a lot of things that kept us not focused on the person telling the story and the person that was in the flashback.
And there were very few... I don't think there were even any close-ups on her in the boardroom and then when she was in Sherlock's office. I'm pretty sure they were all medium or wide shots, so you're not really getting a super good look at her.
They were. I love that how you bring that up, because there were many wide shots, and a lot of them, because I watched this episode a couple times, a lot of the shots were like kind of blurry because she's high on the medicine that they just injected her with. So physically, just in the visual, it's already distorted for us, so we couldn't really get a clear delineation of what she actually looked like.
Right.
That being said, the first time I watched this, when you're watching this episode and you're seeing this scene for the first time, you're like, I actually really appreciated that Sherlock, like, it took Sherlock a little while before he caught up to his brain, mm-hmm. and he actually did spend the whole night, you know, trying, you know, talking with her and having chips with her, and I thought that was a scene, it didn't seem that out of character for him, at least from my perspective, because he is somebody who, he's super high, and he feels bad about John and Mary, so it makes sense that when he sees somebody who's as self-destructive as he is right now, that he would want to kind of circumvent that. That seemed fine to me. It's the reveal at the end of the episode where the more and more I think about it, the more and more I'm like, hey, wait a minute.
sort of thing. I don't know if it was necessarily out of character for him. Let me rephrase it. It was out of character for him, but not in the same way that my view was he was lonely. Yeah. He brought somebody in. Molly was icing him out. He no longer had Mary. Irene's not really, like, all the women were out.
Yeah,
he didn't have a female like out of his life.
Well,
and so
he didn't have friends in his life.
Right. So the first person that needed him, mm-hmm. he latched onto. To the fact now he's walking through the streets of London.
Yeah, and I don't necessarily think he was out of character. I mean, in the last episode, when we covered the last episode, we said that this season did tune in more into the emotional aspect of Sherlock. And if we remember the scene correctly, he did tell her to get out pretty fast. He was like, yeah, you could leave. Okay, I'm good. Weird. I got whatever I needed to get out from you. And then he noticed, you know, how heavy her purse was, and then noticed that, you know what, she might not be all there, and then started to have sympathy for her. And I'm just bringing it back to what I said earlier, I think that has a lot to do with him reeling off of Mary's death. Like, you feel like you have one death on your hands. How would you feel about another one? And I think mm-hmm. that's why he says, let's take a stroll around the park. Not just to solve the case, but to save this woman.
I really like this walk. And I think this is why I say it's slightly out of character, because, you know, he says, I'm going out with a friend. And
Mrs. Hudson's like, you don't have any friends.
Yeah, but that's exactly, as terrible as that sounds, that's exactly what I was thinking. I was like, Sherlock doesn't have friends. Why would he say friends? So I personally, watching it the first time, I realized that this person is probably fake or imaginary. Especially, there was two moments where he was talking to the guy in the kitchen who was probably his drug dealer. We were like, who are you talking to? Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, that's a clear question. And then the second line, I'm going out with a friend. I'm like, no, those are two clear things that, like, wouldn't happen. Yeah.
I still call this, again, just given what we know at the end of the episode, I still call this a little bit of a cheat to the audience. And this is something that Sherlock does every now and then. Mm-hmm. Because we clearly see, you know, the real Faith writing a note down. We clearly see her doing that, which doesn't add up when we see that the person pretending to be Faith fabricated a note for him. So that is an intentional cheat to the audience. Mm-hmm. So
that was actually the real note. She said it at the end.
No, she said, I concocted this little project for you.
Not to jump to the end of the episode, when in the therapy session, when we get to the reveal.
I thought she said it. She engineered the note.
Yeah, she said L. Culverton gave Faith's original note, and a mutual friend put them together.
So okay. I was thinking that she, like, then, like, wrote a note herself, and I'm like, that's a huge
cheat. Original note that the real Faith wrote actually did get into the hands of Sherlock, not by the real Faith, but by the one who's pretending to.
Okay.
Yes.
The something-something cast said he was self-destructive with a plan. He sensed that she was spiraling, which is why I felt he stayed with her out of character, yes, but not out of context of the situation.
I agree with that statement. Yeah. Okay, so that kind of brings us into the whole Culverton Smith. He's the antagonist of this episode. Toby Jones. I mean, he's a great actor.
He's so good.
I liked him as an antagonist. I mean, I think obviously our biggest antagonist of the whole Sherlock series is obviously mm-hmm. going to be Moriarty. Mm-hmm. But I think he did a great job of portraying kind of a crazy, like mentally kind of.
I feel bad for this guy because I feel like I'm always seeing him cast as a villain in some capacity.
He was, to go back to the first episode when we did it together, and I brought in a Harry Potter reference. I'll bring in another one. He was Toby Jones, the voice of Dobby, the house elf.
But I'm talking about, like, in non-voiceover related roles, I feel like the only time I've seen him not be a bad guy is in, like, The Hunger Games. And even then, he's like, that's morally ambiguous. Yeah.
But he's just got that creeper face, too.
Yeah. I mean, I like Toby Jones.
But he's a character actor.
He's definitely a character actor.
I'll give him that. But what were your thoughts on Culverton?
Great performance. Oh, yeah. Like, oh my goodness. But yeah, we were talking about just creepy. Ugh. Like, that's the last thing you want a serial killer to be doing is running a hospital.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Because that is basically just, like, handing them victims on a silver platter.
But you're literally putting people, like, in his care.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think their lives are in his hands. Yeah, like Sweeney Todd and, like,
Demon Barber.
Yeah, they did make the reference. And I think for one episode, his character arc, the abilities of Toby Jones to portray this character and this villain of Culverton Smith was exceptional because, you know, to go from this, like, okay, you're really creepy. Are you a killer? Like, because in my personal opinion, I was like, well, is he a killer or is Sherlock just crazy? Like, I am genuinely questioning Sherlock's abilities here, and I don't know if it was because they set this up and he's in this drug-induced, like, state.
Like, is he just fixating on a celebrity?
Yeah. Which is what we saw in the hospital scene when it was John, Sherlock, and Culverton in the hospital, and he said, somebody brought the fact, I can't remember who it was, brought the fact,
like,
that,
what kind of doctor are you? Can you not tell your
Culverton
friend?
Culverton kept bringing that up, that doubt
high.
In there, right?
Yeah.
Kept bringing that doubt in there. But I thought Toby Jones was great. I obviously like Moriarty better as a character. I think it's because we've known this character for so long, this Moriarty character, and he's still scary, even when he's not on the screen,
because
you don't know who's pulling any of these strings. At the end of the day, Moriarty could have been controlling, like, Culverton.
Again, master manipulator.
From the top down.
He's the puppet master.
I mean, if you think about the last episode into this, Moriarty was there from the beginning, who, you know, to this Faith character, you know, to all these pieces, to Culverton, Moriarty was there the whole time.
Very true. It could have been.
I mean, the line of, you know, all the way down.
Yeah,
went back to Moriarty. They're all connected.
You know, the 6 degrees of Moriarty.
It's Kevin Bacon.
Yes. I have 1 degree from him. Okay. But yes, we mentioned the hospital a little bit too. But, like, what were your thoughts of this DD12 serum that memory inhibitor. Looks scary. That's pretty much the thing that kind of sets off the whole...
I feel like if he hadn't felt the need to drug his entire boardroom, he wouldn't have gotten into this predicament in the first place.
But, okay. That's because we know that Culverton, as accused by Sherlock, that he's the serial killer that everyone knows. But why tell a whole board... I mean, I think...
The idea is that, feeling this compulsion, that the perpetrator needs to confess at a certain point. And that was his whole shtick, is, once he's able to, he does all these things, which he loves and enjoys, but ultimately he knows is wrong, so he does feel the need to confess it, but in a situation that he can control and make sure that there are no repercussions for. I don't know why you would call a group of people in.
Or your own daughter.
Yeah, including your own daughter. That just seems very short-sighted to me. And also, I would just assume that if you're going to confess to anybody, it would be kind of like the scenario that Sherlock sets up in the hospital, where it's just you're just confessing to one person who you intend to murder.
Yeah, I think that Meg is. I think that you are hitting the nail on the head, because in the episode, Culverton himself, he says revealing a secret is the worst thing you can do to a friend if they don't accept it. You can't unsay it, which is exactly why he uses the serum. To tell these people, because they're going to forget it anyway. So technically, he can unsay it because of the serum.
It's like, I need to confess to people who I care about to some degree, my friends and family, but I also don't want to burden you with it, which is just a...
Yeah.
He's a psychopath. Right. He might love his daughter, but ultimately he's a psychopath, and he's just justifying it to himself.
And this goes back to another way that they've portrayed a villain. Like, we saw Moriarty, we never really saw Moriarty kill anybody off of his hand, from what I remember.
Yeah, he set up situations.
He set up situations to kill anybody. Them. We never saw Culverton actually kill anybody. So for him to be a serial killer, it was like, was he a serial killer, or did he just like the thrill of people believing that he was a serial killer?
You can definitely tell, like, or was he just a toying with people? Yeah, you can definitely tell that he likes toying with people.
Right.
Having all this money and power at his disposal. Anybody who threatens that or would even come close to uncovering his secret, he's going to toy with, like a cat and a mouse sort of situation. So when Sherlock calls him out, he just steers right into the skin and was like, yeah, this was all a promotional bit. Way to commit, though. That is a really great way to commit to the act.
But how do you throw off somebody by not, as you said in the last episode, by hiding in plain sight? Like, he was literally doing that. That's what made me think, okay, well, maybe Sherlock is a little crazy, because this man is literally being accused of being a serial killer. Instead of taking the defensive, which everybody would be like, well, he's being defensive, so of course he's a serial killer, he goes the opposite way and is like, well, I'm going to use it as a promotional thing.
I think a person who has money, fame, and power can do that.
That's true.
Well, yes, they can.
And was anybody else getting weird Trump vibes at the beginning of this episode? I didn't want to bring it up.
I just came from the Trump vibes. I didn't want to bring it up. But yeah.
That was literally my first thought, was just...
Yes, they can.
I appreciated this because it is ambiguous, but just the way he was playing it up, it's like he's telegraphing, yeah, I did it, but there's absolutely nothing you can do about it.
Especially in that scene when he was with the kids.
Yeah.
When he was in the hospital with the kids and he raised his hand and said, how do you catch a serial killer?
In front of the children. And you know what killed me even more is the nurse was like, maybe that's not the best topic. And then he has this thing. He has this running theme throughout the episode where if somebody challenges him, he goes, how long have you been working here? And mm-hmm. then he immediately shut up. Like, that right there, as soon as that scene happened, mm-hmm. up until then I was like, oh, maybe Sherlock is crazy. But as soon as he started doing that, the reverse psychology, underlying, under the radar threatening, I was like, no, he's crazy.
He likes to exert his power when necessary. That question, how do you catch a serial killer? I personally had a hard time watching this because the writing is great, but he says victim at random, expression of power, ego signature, human destruction. They like to hide and play. I felt there was just a lot of factual things that were incorrect. I watch Criminal Minds.
Oh, excuse us, Detective Marissa.
I do the Criminal Minds after show, and I feel like they should watch a few episodes of Criminal Minds before.
Better let
them know. That's this guy's problem, is like he does a lot of, because he's so rich and powerful, he thinks he can do these cliche things and not get caught. I talking about Criminal Minds, I've been listening to a lot of the podcasts, like My Favorite Murder, and there are a lot of serial killers who do just that, hide in plain sight, because they have these like alter egos.
It's just something. Go watch the Criminal Minds. It's great.
Listen to My Favorite Murder.
Check out our Criminal Minds after show. So fun. All right. So I did enjoy this hospital scene. We will obviously get to Watson too, but it just kind of that build up and that need to confess, especially when he took him to the mortuary room, which was
my favorite room.
Favorite room.
It's like, okay, if you're not a serial killer, you're probably gonna become one.
Yeah.
Or like there's obviously something dark within him that
You're a necrophiliac.
But then in the mortuary he does the same thing to the guy. What do they call those? The
morticians.
And he's like, I need the room, and he's like, you're not allowed to be here, and he's like, how long have you worked here? I hated that. How long have you worked here? I can work here. Why, who are you?
It says something super dark. And again, we find out later that he has like these secret passageways within the hospital. It makes you wonder, like, what is he actively doing to, like, the staff and the board members to inspire so much fear? Because, like, it's one thing to, like, own the place, but, like, people were legitimately afraid of him. And not in a, I'm gonna lose my job sort of way, like, this man could crush me like a bug sort of way.
Yeah. I think it's more like, they're afraid of him because they know how powerful he is. Like, he's so high in, like, just power status, and he's up on a pedestal. Like, he has the keys to the hospital. There was a whole meeting about it, like a public announcement about
it. Like a ceremony.
A ceremony. So, like, he has power over these people, so people don't want to question him in any way because he knows, like, they know that he can destroy them.
It's also entirely possible he just killed the janitor and took their keys.
Who knows? Because we don't ever see him kill people.
Well, here's the thing. I don't necessarily think he would kill a janitor. No. I think that he kills, like, the people that are in the rooms.
The people
that, are, like,
that, like, conceivably are on their way out.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. He's Dr. Kevorkian.
Thank you.
Yes. I thought of that as well. He says one of the lines, "Why do I kill? It's not about hatred or revenge. I'm not a dark person. Killing human beings, it just makes me incredibly happy." So he's also like a psychopath.
Right. That's the stuff of nightmares.
He's like Charles Manson.
He's a I feel like he's an amalgamation of so many different serial killers.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I love that they brought up H.H. Holmes. Any sort of serial killer that can create their own setting for their murders. And then the disposal of their victims. That is what he has in this hospital.
And then, we had the whole reveal of Faith walking in. It's not the Faith that Sherlock was expecting.
Which, like, sends him, like, off the rails. He was like, wait, what?
If there's one thing Sherlock hates, it's being wrong.
I think it was a mixture of not only being wrong, but definitely being embarrassed.
Yes.
Yeah. In front of Watson, who he believes he is smarter than.
Well, and he loves, they talk about it over and over again in this show, he loves putting on a show for Watson, specifically. So, like, when he gets the rug pulled out from under him, when he's supposed to be Sherlock Holmes, solving the case, down to the millisecond of, like, when this person is supposed to walk in, to show everyone how clever he is, it really does throw him off when something doesn't fall into the way he's calculated it happening.
Well, also, like, the way he was calculating was very cocky and overconfident. Like, oh, I forgot to, calculate the traffic. He kept showing off that, and he's like, oh, I'm still smarter than you, and I set all this up.
A couple scenes earlier, he knew who John Watson's therapist was going to be a week before John Watson decided he was going to switch up therapist.
Yes, let's get to this therapist.
Yeah,
session.
And I was sorry before we move on really quick because Meg jumped on that. do we really think that Watson was? I mean, that Sherlock was caught off guard or embarrassed, or do we know that, like, he, because like you said, he knew John Watson's therapist 2 weeks before John Watson did. So, and then he, you know, choreographically, like, established that John would bring the cane into the room at the end. So how would he have gotten into that room? What I'm saying is, like, I think that Sherlock wasn't exactly embarrassed or caught off guard. I think he knew exactly what was going to happen. I think he knew exactly that Faith was going to walk into the room. Wasn't the Faith that he was talking to.
I don't know about that, but we definitely know that he, given, again, what we find out later in the episode, mm-hmm. that he needed to put himself into a position where John Watson needed to save him. Right. He needed to put himself in a position where he was in danger.
I think with Sherlock, it's all probability. So mm-hmm. I think that for him, Faith not being the Faith that he met at his house might have been an independent variable that he didn't see coming.
But then, like, as soon as he gets introduced to a new variable, he can work around that. He's like, okay, this is the plan.
Right.
Well, also, I think it was a little bit of embarrassment because we all know that he's also high. He's definitely
super high.
So it just shows like unprofessionalism, but like he's also just self-doubting himself, like how smart he thinks he actually is when he finds himself. He actually makes mistakes because of the drugs.
And I think that was to your point, that's a great addition to that character, is that we've seen a very vulnerable, mistake, apt to mistake Sherlock. You know, we see Sherlock as Sherlock fans as like this perfect Sherlock Holmes.
Never wrong.
And there are opportunities for us to see him as a human being, that he does have feelings. Like somebody said earlier, the emotional journey of this whole season. And then, and a lot of Sherlock's emotions, we talk about in the next episode and the culmination of that. So we did see a very different Sherlock. I know I was reading Stephen Moffat, like the creators had said that this whole season set Sherlock up to be the Sherlock that he is right now. And so we're now getting this new, like before it was like, you know, like the young Sherlock. And now this is the new, you know, the updated Sherlock.
Yes. This therapy session, which I actually kind of really enjoyed, because it was, we finally get our main two characters back together. Because at the beginning of the episode, a lot of time has passed. We know that John has disconnected from Sherlock. There is like no relationship going on whatsoever. But the fact that these two are now forced to be together again, despite how hesitant John is over this, like, they still have to work together.
Not only do I like the therapy session for that reason, but it also reintroduces Mary as a character still involved in the show, because I thought they were just going to cut her out. Like, she wasn't going to be seen anymore, because after she had died in the last episode. Mm-hmm. So to see that John is still talking to her and that she still has a presence, whether that's just in John's head, made me feel really good that she was still around.
I do have to mention this. I personally, this is just my personal opinion, I can't stand it when you kill, like, a really great character in a show and you still see them, like, the next 5 episodes.
Really?
You know? Because it just makes their death less impactful when they're still sticking around. I mean,
even if it's a specter.
Yeah, it's like, I love Mary. We talked about this whole last episode, and it was great to actually see her. And I'm like, oh, great, we still get to see her. But it just, like, the more you see a person who's supposed to be dead, it makes their death less impactful.
I kind of liked her running commentary. She had pretty spot-on commentary. But I agree with you. I think the most impactful way to have, like, a character who's dead appearing in somebody's mind is if they haven't really fully grasped that this person is gone yet, and the audience doesn't know that. Mm-hmm. Like, I love the way they did it in Scrubs, where it's like you're seeing this person who is already dead, but the audience doesn't know they're already dead, and then it's like a huge gut punch at the end of the episode.
Like The Sixth Sense.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Kind of.
I don't know, I disagree with Marissa, because I'm like, I just feel like, yeah, we know Mary's dead, she's still around. It's like twisting the knife. Like, every time she speaks, it's like, I really wish you were alive. I'm still here, I really wish you were alive, but I'm not.
Well,
but
and not only, she's basically telling him the whole episode, you have to let me go, you have to move on, you have to forgive yourself, you have to forgive Sherlock, and he's like, yeah, no, I'm not going to do any of those things.
No, but, like, the great thing, it was still great to see Mary in this episode, because she was basically Dr. Watson's inner ID, like his inner thought train, which I enjoyed. We got really Dr. Watson's mind.
Yeah,
would you have felt the same way if it was just Mary's voice and not Mary physically?
Yes. Because you always hear, you can always think of people and like what they're in your head, but like seeing them is, yeah, it was great on screen. But I think that would have been more because it shows that, yeah, she's physically not there. She is actually dead. So a little audio cues here and there would be nice.
I agree with you to an extent, and I'm not sure how I feel about it personally because I see both good things about having her here, and I also see, like, well, there were other ways to go about showing the loss and remorse. But one thing I really did like is hearing, because she is an aspect of his internal monologue and his thought process, that she's making all these deductions that Sherlock would normally be making. And it just shows that spending time with Sherlock has trained Watson to think very deductively in a way.
He's rubbed off on him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I completely agree with that because, yeah, he does think the same way as Sherlock. Like, Watson could be as smart as Sherlock, you know.
Yeah. He's a doctor. Aspects.
Yeah, yeah.
And we talked about it before we did the first show, which was the different types of Sherlock Holmes. You know, you got the movies, you got the old movies, and then CBS has their new show, not new, but their show Elementary. We love Elementary.
So
Lucy Liu and but Lucy Liu's Dr. Watson is learning how to be like Sherlock. Mm-hmm. So this is a good look into what a future Dr. Watson would be like as a partner to Sherlock instead of just a sidekick to Sherlock.
Yeah, I said in the last episode that Sherlock directed a lot of his inner thoughts to Mary, and I thought that's why they had a good relationship, because Mary was smarter than John. But I feel like that's a discredit to John, so I apologize. I feel like, yeah, you guys are right. I think that Sherlock has rubbed off on John, and that he is starting to be more aware and more calculative in his thinking.
Well, and everybody who within the framework of the show who looks at John's blog and sees Sherlock does see John as the sidekick and the guy who's sitting there very wide-eyed at how brilliant Sherlock is. We all know that John, yeah, he's there and he puts up with Sherlock, but it's not just this wide-eyed, astonished, wow, you're so smart every single time. But that's the perception, and you feel like Dr. Watson definitely does internalize that and resents it a lot. And you see that when they walk into the hospital together, and everyone is like, oh my gosh, Sherlock Holmes and Watson, and they're like, yay. So you can definitely tell that even the Mary stuff aside, like, that's something that continually bothers him. And
you think that's out of jealousy.
Probably.
It's like Batman and Robin.
Yeah, exactly. It's always getting relegated to the sidekick role when you do play a very valuable part.
You know who was also valuable in this episode? Mrs. Hudson.
Yes. I'm so glad you brought her up.
How awesome was she?
She
had, like, two really key scenes in this episode. Like, Mrs. Hudson, you are awesome. She is a great woman.
Yeah, you forget how you know, she's just like, oh, would anyone like some tea? And you forget how freaking awesome she is to have lived this incredible life that she's led just to get to this point.
Yeah.
I loved how she crashed the therapy session driving with that awesome car.
Aston Martin. Yeah. Like, straight up James Bond.
You know, being a widow of a drug dealer definitely has its perks.
Was it just me, or did anybody else expect Sherlock to get out of the car, not Mrs. Hudson? I was mind blown, Mrs. Hudson. I never expected her that.
Yeah, I was expecting Sherlock just because of the way he was driving.
Yeah, and again, not the so car, erratic.
But, like, yeah, it was a crazy driver. You wouldn't think Mrs. Hudson is capable of that reckless driving.
I think I expected it to be Sherlock, because when the therapist got out, when John and the therapist walked out of the house, she said, are you going to introduce me? And by that point, we had not seen who was stepping out of the car.
Yeah.
We just saw somebody stepping out. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, of course it's Sherlock, because it was right after she talked about Sherlock.
Like, oh,
and
like,
she was like, are you going to introduce me? So we assumed it was going
to
be Sherlock.
One leads to the next.
Yeah.
I love Mrs. Hudson because she's one of the few people who can actually kind of control Sherlock in a way.
Like,
one of the few people that Sherlock will actually listen to, or like stop in his tracks to do something for someone. And she brings the nurturing side.
Right.
Yeah, it's great seeing somebody else being able to manipulate Sherlock. All she had to do was drop her teacup, and she was able to disarm him to the point where she can stuff him into the trunk of her Aston Martin.
Not only disarm him, but disarm him, handcuff him. And then hold him at gunpoint. And my favorite part was when she said about the handcuffs, like...
She's like, I've used them
before. And you're like, Mrs. Hudson.
Now I need your handcuffs. Now I need your handcuffs. I happen to know there's a pair in the salad drawer. I've borrowed them before. I'm like, Mrs. Hudson. Is there something you need to tell
us? She's knocking boots.
And she's like, don't judge me. Yeah. Like, how dare you?
It's great. And she is the one who brings Sherlock to Watson, bringing them two together. I love it. But also, back in, you know, after the whole hospital scene, back in Sherlock's flat, 22-1B. when the guys go through, you know, inspecting the place and stuff. But she also, we had her crazy fun moments scene, but then we had her real moment. She is a human. She does care about Sherlock and Watson, especially.
She cares about
Mary's
Watson a lot.
Video.
Yeah.
Mary's video. We got the reveal of the rest of Mary's video. Apparently, there's more. Save Watson. Save John Watson. What were your thoughts of this video?
Well, first of all, the video had Miss Me on it. So I was like, oh man, this is trouble.
Yeah.
You know, because we just didn't know. Like, we have been so conditioned as Sherlock viewers to see anytime that we see Miss Me, we automatically associate it with Moriarty. So I was a little nervous for him. I didn't know what was going
to
happen.
Well, and not to mention at the end of the last episode, after the credits, we had just that little snippet from the video saying, go to hell, Sherlock.
Right.
And it's just like, whoa! Like, she died to save him. Why would she say that in any capacity? And so it was nice to get the full
context.
Monologue. Yeah, just like, you have to go to hell so that John Watson will save you.
Yeah. Go right into hell and make it look like you mean it.
Right.
I really love this. I mean, and that just makes me like Mary even more, which makes me more upset knowing that she's dead. But the fact that she loves John so much to convince Sherlock to go to hell, do whatever craziness to save John, is to have him save you.
Now, here's a question. Put yourself in John Watson's shoes. And I'm sorry.
I'm just writing it down.
But put yourself in John Watson's shoes. If you saw this video of your significant other, who's now departed, telling your former best friend that, hey, you have to be nearly suicidal so that my husband will go and save you, would you feel like that was overtly being, like, manipulative? Because I would be like, why didn't you just send me a video saying, get over it and forgive your friend, as opposed to concocting this big scenario where I get manipulated into forgiving somebody I'm not ready to forgive yet?
I don't think so at all, because John being around Mary and Sherlock, he knows he's going to get manipulated in some kind of way, so he's already used to it. But I feel like if Mary had just sent him a video, then it wouldn't have been as impactful. And I feel like John had a respect for Mary's decision, because in the end, I think that he realized that she was right in doing what she did and how she did it.
Yeah, and I don't think it's out of, like, oh, go be suicidal so he can save you. No, I don't think it was more like that. It's like, just get yourself into a situation bad enough where John can't help but save you.
Yeah,
and I would feel very manipulated.
I'm sure he did feel manipulated on some level, but at the same time, to what Tim said, I think that he does feel obligated. Like, he's a military doctor. His instinct is to save people that are close to him, regardless of the situation. He might not. Mm-hmm. He obviously hated this whole situation of being dragged around with Sherlock, going through this motions of doing all this stuff. But at the end of the day, his military doctor instincts kicked in, and he felt that he needed to save his friend. And that's what she was pushing him towards. Because, like we said, they got so far out of, you know, pushed Mary's backstory out of the way, saying, I don't want any part of that. Let's start from where we are right now. I'm no longer a military doctor. Every bit of John Watson's training went out of the way for however long they were married. Mm-hmm. So she was getting him back to the old John Watson before Mary, which was that savior, that instinctive partner that Sherlock needed.
Kind of watching this and talking about it now, I'm wondering, you know, very much what John Watson's state of mind is when watching this video, because he still feels really guilty about cheating on her, too. And so, like, kind of seeing her, yeah, they're manipulating him, but at the same time, he can clearly tell that Mary, you know, he put her up on a pedestal when they first met, and then they found out about her past. But she put him up on a pedestal, too. So he's feeling guilty about, you know, the man that Mary thought he was versus the man that he actually is. So I'm sure when he heard her say, you know, he will save you, but, like, you have to do this first, he probably feels really guilty about, like, his friends thinking that they needed to set up this scenario for him to save them in the first place.
Do you think Mary knew about the...
If you need him, I swear he will be there.
Yeah.
And it just shows, like, how much Mary actually does truly know Watson.
Yeah, and that he won't ask for help, but he won't refuse it either.
Yeah, but he won't refuse it.
I wonder what triggered the release of the video. Like, who delivered this video? Where did this video come from? Like, where did Sherlock find this video?
That is a great question. Because it got mailed to him.
Lost in the mail.
Right. So. Because she had made the video before the whole AJ thing happened, because she knew that AJ coming after her, there was a real possibility that she would be killed. Mm-hmm. So she made this video in order to...
But she made it once they... When?
Before AJ... So she left to go find AJ.
Oh, so she made a video then.
Yeah, she made it before she went to go find AJ because she knew that there was a possibility that she would die.
Right.
And she knew in whatever situation, whether it was AJ killed her or Miss Norberry killed her, that she was dead and that Sherlock would have to help Watson through it.
Right. So I'm just saying, how did it get to Sherlock?
Well, I feel like Mary, she's also very calculated. She knows she can anticipate things. And kind of like Sherlock, you know how he can always kind of foresee things and have things set up? I feel Mary is capable of, like, having someone send a messenger already, like, on this date, send this video, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So I just feel that, like, I can accept it enough that Mary already sent it.
I'm with you, Marissa.
It got to the right people.
That's all that matters. All that, yeah,
I mean, we did kind of, we haven't talked about it, but, I mean, Watson did also beat up Sherlock to a pretty severe degree, and then told him to his face, yes, I blame you for Mary's death. So, you know...
Did you believe that at that point?
That he believed? That he blamed
that
him?
That John was like, yes, you did kill my wife.
I don't think he believed
projecting a little bit, again, because of that internal guilt about having cheated on her just before she died.
But I also think it's not only... because of his indiscretions, I also think it's because he left the protection of his wife in someone else's hands when he should have also been the person trying to protect his wife. Yeah. Like, John Watson could have easily jumped in front of that bullet for Sherlock, but it took his wife to be instinctive like that to do that. So
John wasn't technically there at the scene yet. She got shot.
Oh, she came in.
Yeah, he didn't see it. So that's why
They were all standing there. I thought Mycroft was there.
No. I feel like everyone was there. The police were there.
Mycroft was there.
Why did the police do anything?
That's why I'm really frustrated that John would think that, yeah, Sherlock is the one who killed my wife. But there were so many witnesses who actually saw what happened. You'd think they would actually tell Watson the truth.
I could have sworn John was there.
No,
I thought he was there.
I watched the first episode a few times. Mary got shot first, and then she was already lying on the floor.
And then John walked in?
Well, Watson was waiting for a sitter.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got it.
And Watson runs in afterwards.
He had to stay
for
Rosie.
Watson didn't physically see the shooting. But with everyone there, Mycroft and the police and even Sherlock himself, you think those people, the actual witnesses, would tell John what happened. Therefore, John wouldn't say,
police should have gotten the civilians to safety as they were surrounding the perp. And then if the civilian did get shot, police trained in some sort of medical training?
That's last episode, but it's making me angry now that I think about it. Back to this one. Get it together,
British police force.
The Bladcast says, this episode is the perfect unit of Moffat and Gaddis, the creators, which happens too rarely on Doctor Who, but when it does, it's perfect, like this episode of Sherlock, which was a perfect episode of Sherlock.
Yeah, yeah, getting Sherlock. Down to the climactic scene at the end of the... where Culverton slips in through his secret passage door.
So creepy.
Almost suffocating Sherlock. Well, he was suffocating, but, like, successful. That was scary.
That was scary. I really love the confession that happened before that whole him trying to, you know, suffocate Sherlock. I loved how he was overdosing him on the IV drip, and then he was like, you know what, this is taking too long, so this is what's gonna happen. Like, I was like,
but I want to hear you say, I don't want to die. Yes. First. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Oh, God. I really appreciated the fact that even though there was a tape recorder in there, they made a point about tape recordings not being admissible in court. Like, I really liked that, like, they took that aspect of it. And Sherlock knew that, but just having that one bit on a recording and getting this man into a police station was enough to just get him to confess everything.
But, I mean, what we said earlier in this episode, you know, he wanted to confess. He was, like, aching to confess to somebody. So, at this point, he was already caught red-handed, literally. So, he just confessed.
Yeah, he's just bursting at the seams.
Yeah, he just let it out.
I just gotta tell somebody.
Yeah, I love the you know, the whole number three theory. It's like, everyone stops after three.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. That was very clever, yeah.
The number three.
It is a number of completion.
It is. That's very true. Mm. But, yeah, I thought it was very, very intelligent, of course, of Sherlock already pre-planning 3 weeks ahead that Watson would bring the cane into his room as a parting gift that would have a recording device in it.
Yeah, that's a little weird to me.
It's a little too pre-planned.
It's a little too pre-planned.
But I'll accept it because Sherlock is brilliant.
Right.
Yes.
Like,
yes, exactly.
We didn't question it when it happened.
Yes.
But now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like,
how long has that device been recording Watson's conversation?
Right.
I think I wouldn't have believed it if Culverton hadn't looked for the other devices. Like, if he was like, oh, I wouldn't even have thought, like, a recording device was in this room. Like, then I would have been like, come on, guys. But he was like, I already searched all the recording devices, and Sherlock was like, they didn't. So
that's cute.
That's what made me a little bit more, like, believable toward,
Somebody said, why, I was seriously hoping, why do people always stop counting at three to mean we get a fourth episode this season? That would be great. What if they just surprise us with another episode this season? Like, out of the blue, and we're like, what do?
We're actually not done yet. Right. Oh my God, we
miss
would freak
me?
Out.
Like, oh, happy Valentine's Day, everybody. Here you go.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
That would be.
I mean, we got Valentine's a Christmas Day, special, so, yeah. Which maybe we should retroactively go back and cover. Just saying.
Yeah,
not
the Abominable Breath, right?
That, but totally.
We'll do a fourth hour.
I would take it. I mean, granted, we had to wait 3 years for just these three episodes that came and gone in 3 weeks. Yeah, I sure hope we don't have to wait another 3 years.
Isn't this the end, though?
I was about to say, there's rumors. Yeah, that
we'll
this is.
I heard that this was it.
We'll get it. We still have another episode to cover.
We do.
Let's not cut it
short. We'll get to
cool
that.
Your jets.
But I did enjoy the ending of this episode. And, of course...
Enjoy the ending? That's a little underwhelming, Marissa.
Still talking. The climactic scene of, you know, the whole reveal. Catching... him, because I think the great thing about Culverton is that he is just another civilian in public, so it just makes you question. There are so many regular people,
just
quote unquote
like
regular people out there that are serial killers who are literally in hiding places.
I used to watch The Following on Fox.
Ooh,
that was a good show.
Let me tell y'all what. This is why I don't go out in crowds anymore. People are like, you want to go to the Women's March? And I'm like,
No.
Like, I want to, you know, be there, but no, just people just
I'll
getting
hashtag.
Right. People getting slashed all over the place. You watch The Following, you can't trust anybody these days.
Very, very, very true.
And to your point, like, it was really nice to get a criminal who didn't necessarily play into the larger picture, because we've been dealing with these masterminds for so long. It's nice to just kind of have one kind of normal, quote unquote, normal creep to take down.
Or just like another regular civilian that could be any one of us. Yeah. I think that's what makes it more scary.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have to talk about the
end.
The reveal of the sister. Did you see this coming?
No.
That could have been the title of the episode.
Yes.
The reveal of the sister.
Well, that would have given it away.
This
is, like I said, I'm kind
Seriously.
Of upset. On the one hand, it's super cool, but I was like, oh, man, like, I really liked that scene at the beginning with it just being, you know, Faith and Sherlock. I didn't necessarily like that we had, like, that this whole thing was concocted by the other Holmes sibling. That, to me, seemed a little bit, like, kind of like seeing the recording device in John Watson's cane. This is one of those things where it's like, okay, this is like a Xanatos gambit where there's no way you could really predict all of these things perfectly falling
but
into place.
Maybe you could, because we know Sherlock is brilliant and he can calculate all these things, but it makes it more scary knowing that the sister can plan so much, even more than what Sherlock is capable of.
That's exactly what right. I was going to say. I think you hit the nail on the head, because we say that, oh yeah, Sherlock is so calculated, he can plan things two weeks in advance. His sister could take it one step further and plan things months in advance,
right.
and then go undercover as, you know, the girl that Watson's flirting with, and then the therapist, and then
she's
the faith,
disguise.
And then all this. It's like, I was not expecting that at all.
I have to say that, like, it was, I loved her point about, you know, nobody notices someone like her, because she was able to take on all these different mm-hmm. personas, and I, as a viewer, didn't notice that it was the same actress every single
right.
time.
Nope. And that actress, from what we understand, is that actress actually had to audition for all three different characters. She didn't know they were one character until the end, and they ended up telling
great,
her
though.
That she was
like,
one character.
Again, it really shows her acting chops.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the actress, Sia, I believe, actually worked with Benedict Cumberbatch when he did another Shakespearean show.
I was just going to say, sure, calculated people are the most predictable, though. So, mm-hmm. and Sherlock, as being as calculated as he is, I'm sure his sister, Eros, who's equally as calculated, predicted Sherlock's move, so and knew that he would do this, so because he is so predictable.
Yeah, I think the reveal was just like physically scary to watch, knowing just how again with the cinematography, it just got super dark. Like mm-hmm. the visually, the light got dark, it got dimmer, the atmosphere yeah. got darker. She revealed the taking out the contacts,
ooh.
Just physically.
She had the color eyes.
Yeah,
it's like Dementors.
She looked scary.
Yeah.
And it was just very intimidating.
And for a little while, you're seeing, like, the light reflect off of her glasses lenses. Like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. You must have totally mentioned it earlier. I really love it when they do that, where, you know, it's just the light reflecting off of someone's glasses so that their eyes are obscured.
Yes.
Because, again, eyes are the windows to the soul, and so it's really
when
cool.
When you don't
they do
have
that.
Eyes, or soulless.
Yeah. I think that you touched on a really good subject that we didn't talk about. Watson was the one who kind of caught on to it. When he, like, let that detail... Well, she let that detail slip, and he was like, I didn't tell you about that. And she was like, oh, you must have mentioned it in a preview. And he was like, no, I didn't. Like,
yeah.
Something's not right. So this just goes to prove, like, you know, Sherlock is rubbing off on John.
Yeah,
and
he's smarter than people give him credit
for. John also knows Sherlock so well because he's talking to Mycroft, and Mycroft's like, you were talking about someone else. You weren't talking about Sherlock.
And yeah. Mycroft had already let slip earlier on in the episode... Either the last episode or this episode, that there was another Sherlock
yeah.
Holmes
but
sibling.
Is it bad? Maybe a little sexist that we all thought it was a brother and not a sister.
Well, that's what they made. That's the way they
no,
made
she,
it sound.
And
like.
She said it, but I'm just asking in general.
I think that's the rule of threes. I mean, no, seriously.
Three brothers.
They already mentioned it twice, and then when it came to the third time, that's when we got our reveal, where we automatically, on the third time, we thought it was going to be a guy. It's actually a girl. It's a sister.
It seems like there's been a conscious effort, both in the Christmas special and in this one, where I think there's been a lot of... Obviously, there's been a lot of controversy in the previous seasons as to how female characters have been portrayed, and I feel like making the other Holmes sibling a woman and again, kind of like, without really diving into the Abominable Bride, but like, the themes kind of touched on in there and the morals touched on in there are kind of going like, okay, fan base, we're listening. Here's an awesome female villain. Enjoy.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, and I enjoy that.
Yeah.
I do, because we get a lot of males, just in, not just Sherlock, but a lot of stories. It's not to call out, like, make this a gender issue, but most killers are male. Most serial killers are male.
Statistically speaking, yeah, you're right.
It's actually, yeah, statistically proven that most killers or murderers are male.
And yeah. maybe that's why
I think we're just conditioned to think it's a male.
In the CBS version of Sherlock Elementary, Moriarty is a male. I mean, is a female. I'm sorry,
yes.
is a female. So,
which is great.
Watson
is a female. Moriarty is a female. So
they spend quite.
Yeah, not to get into spoiler territory with that, but I really like the way they went about doing that reveal
In Elementary.
In Elementary, yeah. So yeah, I am all for it here as well.
Okay, and quickly before we wrap up, because we do have to mention this as well. Irene Adler. Question mark? Text message. Happy birthday, Sherlock. But I did also like the reconciliation between Sherlock and Watson during this because I thought it was good.
Yeah, and I liked that Sherlock, you know, takes what John Watson has to say because he's like, no, I don't, that thing about emotion, no, I don't care. She can text me all she wants. I never text back. And Watson's like, you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Cherish what you have before it's too late. And then Sherlock goes, okay, well, I do text her.
Just text her, phone her, do something while there's still a chance because that chance doesn't last forever. Trust me, Sherlock, it's gone before you know it. Before you know it. But that's just a bromance, man. It's great.
And here's poor Molly. Can't even get a text back.
Oh, Molly.
Just saying.
We'll talk about that.
But anything else about this episode?
Just that it was a nice one-off with a pretty awesome
setup for the next one.
Yeah, it was creepy to know that he has a sister, but it's also really exciting to know that there is another just demented, like, as Holmes. Calculated, Holmes out there.
But there's no Holmes that other than Sherlock that we like. We don't like Mycroft.
I mean,
we love to hate Mycroft. Yeah, like, he's understand. Like a hateable character.
I feel like he's the long-suffering older brother. I don't hate him.
But you never know who's, you know he's on Sherlock's side, but then you're like, do you want him to
you
fail?
You know he's looking out for Sherlock, right. but like, at the same time, you're like, you're a bad older brother.
Okay. Yeah. And before we wrap, two quick facts for, you know, Easter eggs trivia. Holmes fans know that the Great Detective was actually born on January 6, 1854, and the Lying Detective, this actual episode, aired on January 8th, so it's around the actual time of real Sherlock Holmes' birthday. And once more, unto the breach, you know, when Holmes was all, like, shooting at the wall, reciting Henry V, that's actually, that's the whole spiel he was doing for this. Once more unto the breach, which is the opening line of the famous soliloquy.
Nice.
In Henry V.
Look at that. We are giving you guys some facts.
And in Henry V, that's actually the first reference to afoot, and that's where Sherlock says the game is afoot.
Oh.
That's the tie into the Henry V. All right. Great episode. In the meantime, where can everyone keep following you?
Awesome. I am Timothy Michael. You can follow me on all social media platforms at I am Timothy Mike.
I'm Megan Salinas. You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at TheMenguin. That's TheMenguin. I am also on a bunch of shows here at AfterBuzz, and I write articles for The Movie Chick. That's Chick with 2 Ks. Be sure to check those out.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at DrexelHerd.
And you can follow me on Twitter at SerafiniTV. You can follow all of us here, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those fun social media platforms at AfterBuzzTV. Keep rating, keep commenting, keep subscribing. We're still talking about Sherlock. We have one more episode left. Until then, we will see you next time.
Bye, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.